Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road, and you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Barry White.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the last of the Planet of the Apes movies so far. War for the Planet of the Apes, 2017. Directed again by Matt Reeves. I'm going to take the heat off of boyfriend Jesse. And I'm going to go straight to Drew for setting us up for this movie. I think my expectations were a little too high, but let's talk.
Yeah. I'm going to guess we all had a similar experience that this movie was not at all what I expected it was going to be. I mean, it was such a change from what I was anticipating that I didn't know how to process what I had just watched. And luckily we had a long turnaround in between podcasts this time. And I had enough time to go back and watch it a second time, which is rare for me. But I think that was necessary to get recalibrated and then experience the movie and see what was going on. Did either of you have a similar experience to that?
I wrote down that this was like Saving Private Ryan Apes Edition.
Yeah, this, I didn't know what to expect, and I was buoyed by how much I loved the last two movies. And so this was set up to be, maybe set up too high on the too high a pedestal, although I didn't get the chance to watch it twice, but I did watch... I watched it the first time, and I thought about it quite a bit.
Yeah, me too.
And then I watched the extras on Brother Jay's recommendation, the before and after, like the capture versus final scenes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, it was amazing, because I had never seen that before. I had seen like stills, but I didn't go back and watch the extras of the other movies, so I didn't realize what the process, how detailed the process really was.
How Andy Serkis didn't win an Oscar, I don't know.
He should have won. That movie should have won for every technical Oscar available to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was telling boyfriend Jesse that one of the things that really struck me was in comparing, like, they captured the actors crying.
Oh.
And that's the level of detail, yeah. Which just blew me away. And I'll go on record. I liked this movie. However, I did not like it as much as the previous two. And this movie had some problems, i.e. Jar Jar Binks. So,
yeah, I think I felt the same way. I liked this movie quite a bit. I like the whole three movie series. I liked watching the extra feature that talked about, from this crew's perspective, what it meant in the ape canon. And the Marky Mark movie is only mentioned for like 10 seconds in a 20-minute documentary.
I did not watch that special feature.
It's good.
And this movie sets up the universe for the future / past.
Yeah. Or it could stop right here.
Yeah, but yeah. They've laid all of the groundwork to go right back. To start it all over.
That's what took me a little bit to think about. Because, yeah, there were some Jar Jar Binks things in this. I mean, there were times during this movie where I was like, oh, come on. But when I thought about it later in its totality, it all works. I think it's relying a little bit too much on fan service and nostalgia. not just of the Apes movies, but of all the movies.
Even your favorite movie?
Even my favorite movie, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they leaned on it so hard.
Yeah.
And I think they could have done without the ape Jar Jar Binks, bad ape. They could have done without that character entirely. And I think it...
I had the exact same thought. I actually thought Jar Jar Binks the first time I watched the movie, but I completely changed my opinion the second time I watched it, because he is essential to the plot. He sort of establishes that apes all around the world got smart from the virus. It wasn't just the set of San Francisco apes.
Exactly.
And also, he needed to provide comic relief because this movie was so bleak.
I don't know. I would have preferred it just to be 100% bleak.
No, I don't. I do not think that is a sustainable watch.
Well, without him, it would have gone into like Passion of the Christ territory.
Well, it was very biblical, and there was a lot of that anyway.
Yeah.
You know, Messiah, Jesus, crucifixion, resurrection. I mean, it was not, this movie, again, not subtle.
Yeah, I could not get this movie out of my head after I watched it, and part of it was the whiplash I suffered. Because I was expecting war. that is not at all what they delivered, which is sort of in line with all of the movies. All three movies gave me something I didn't know I wanted.
Bald Woody Harrelson?
You know, Woody Harrelson performed this role in an exemplary manner.
Yeah, I don't know who else could have done that role.
No, because he managed to pull it off.
Dennis Hopper? Mm-hmm.
I was groaning a little bit because it was just so on the nose.
Like when he was shaving his head and stuff.
Well, and just in the beginning when he had the paint on his face. Yeah, he's shaving his
Apocalypse
head.
Now.
And he had the Apocalypse mm-hmm. Now in the tunnel. I mean, there's so much Apocalypse Now in this, and the fact that they disagree with his methods. I mean, the whole thing. But
how he's up by himself in a room from everybody else, but he's the leader.
Oh yeah, no, it's all in there.
It's stolen.
No, it's homage.
Sure.
It's just a little groany. But I like what they did with the Alpha Omega.
Oh, that pissed me off.
Okay. Well,
there's only one thing in this movie that pissed me off as far as a callback. And that was your Nova.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, because it worked. It made me groan, but it worked.
I was okay with giving her the Nova sign and being like, oh, okay. Yeah. But having to actually say your Nova, like no, I got it.
I didn't. I needed that. I didn't get it. I didn't connect the dots. At least not. I mean, if I had rewatched it, maybe. But I didn't get that. I was too confused by what was going on and trying to figure out what was going on. But this, I mean, this sets up Taylor. This sets up Taylor coming into the next movie.
Oh yeah, no, it sets up everything.
Yeah. So.
And they managed to explain all the like buffoonery, like all of the crazy leaps in the first couple movies. I mean, you don't really end up with the suicide cult, although you could. I mean, there could still be Alpha Omegas left.
And one of the problems I had with this is purportedly this movie was 15 years after the initial outbreak. And that seems too short a time period. Because the last movie was supposedly, 10 years after? Mm-hmm. So that just seems... I appreciate, but the timeline seems a little... I don't know. There's too much apocalypse and not, I just, I don't know. I call it a BS, but
it's hard to say because this, for being a movie called War for the Planet of the Apes, it's really small. This is a really small contained movie, just like they all are actually. But yeah, so it's hard to tell like what is really going on with the rest of the world. I mean, there are still enough humans left to have opposing military forces. Not That's giant true. Ones, but...
Well, we don't know that. Maybe. We just have a small piece of North America. Well, a small piece of the United States, even.
A small piece of the West Coast, for that matter.
Yeah, it's so...
Northern California.
Northern California, which looked like Alaska.
Well, it was kind of Northern California, Pacific Northwest, though.
After I was scratching my head so much about this movie, I went looking for information, just trying to suck up information, figure out what was going on. And I wish I'd written it down so I could credit where I saw it, but somebody, a movie critic, put out a tweet that said all of these movies were named wrong. It should have gone Dawn, and then the second one should have been War, and the third one should have been Rise. And I actually think that would have fixed a lot for me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I would agree with that.
But yeah, there wasn't much war in this movie as far as like battling for the future of the planet.
But the war they did have was pretty supreme.
Well, and there was that big war speech with Woody Harrelson at the end about how this was the humans' last stand. This wasn't the apes' last stand, although it could have been.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, the movie opens with the drum beats of war, basically.
Yeah, it's a combat movie in a bigger way. Although the last movie
went right to it's not.
You don't think
it's not a combat movie. There's hardly any combat in it.
Well, it begins with combat and ends with combat.
Yeah, and then there's 4 hours of prison camp in between.
Yeah, it was very Nazi-esque.
I mean,
that's why I called it Escape. That's why I called it Saving Private Ryan. It was very kind of World War II-esque. Concentration camps and escapes and forced labor and, guards looming watch over interned prisoners.
Yeah, I could see that. But the beginning was all platoon.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yep.
I mean, all they needed was some 60s music. Well, okay, let's talk about the plot. So this is 15 years after the initial outbreak, 5 years after the last movie. And I think we all agreed that we loved the last movie.
Yes.
And it left us a good place, a good pivot point.
Yes.
And this starts out with the ape still in the Muir Woods, and we see a group of humans advancing on an ape outpost or searching generally in the woods and stumbling upon an ape outpost or some sort of encampment of the apes. And we see that there are traitor apes or apes that have been co-opted by the humans or enslaved by the humans. Not really enslaved because they're willing participants.
Yeah, well, you don't know at first.
Yeah. And they are branded with the Alpha Omega symbol. And they are also branded with the word donkey. And they're referred to as donkeys and not treated very well.
They should have just used a pair of scissors as a symbol.
Well, there's a lot of scissors in this movie. So we have a pretty interesting battle between the apes and the humans. And the apes finally basically outnumber the humans and take some prisoners. And this is where we find out that there is this colonel. Could have been any other rank if they weren't so pushing Apocalypse Now like right on the nose.
But, mm-hmm. Well, that also gave them the misnamed Kurna.
Yes, what was it? Was that Colonel?
Kurna, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because his name was Colonel McCullough or something, right?
Yeah, but they couldn't articulate that. They thought his name was Kurna. Ah. You know.
Something wrong with the glass. It's bad for the glass.
Kali Ma.
So
that was a callback to the first movie. Come on.
It was a callback to the Marky Mark movie, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we have this battle, and we have a guy in particular who goes by the name of Preacher, who has a crossbow, Gabriel Chavarria. Anyway, so he gets captured with some other humans.
Yeah, by the way, I expected him to make a turn that he never made.
Yeah, me too.
I was a pro ape turn.
Yes.
Yeah. There wasn't any of that.
It was all set up for that.
Yeah.
But no.
It made more dramatic by the helmet moment.
The helmet moment?
It's when he loses his helmet at the end of the movie.
Maybe I didn't, that didn't register, or I didn't remember it.
A spoiler alert coming. 3, 2, 1. When he gets blown up, his helmet gets blown clear of him and falls before Caesar.
Ah.
Oh.
Yeah, well.
Sorry, I don't think of that as a helmet moment.
I think the cinematography angle being hinted at that was all that was left of him. That his head was gone.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have the apes are now afraid of this colonel who has vowed to destroy them because now there is a legend of this colonel guy. But the humans have the legend of Caesar. And so both think that if the other leaves the colonel guy wants to kill Caesar and destroy the apes, and Caesar would prefer the colonel goes away and never comes back.
I don't think that all the apes are afraid of the colonel. I only think some of them are. And that's where the dissension in the ranks allows for some of them to break free and defect. Because the scared ones are worried, so they defect. The ones that are not worried stay.
Well, those are mostly Koba's followers.
Exactly.
True.
Yeah. And by the way, I was surprised that Koba didn't make an appearance in this movie. Because he did, but in all, there was everything to believe that Koba was going to make a reappearance.
I'm really glad he didn't, because especially watching it the second time, his presence is still really heavy the way they handle it.
Oh yeah, no, and I thought it was clever to have the internal conflict with Caesar be not only revenge, but to be revenge drove him to be what he, you know, what he turned him into Koba.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is why Maurice was such an important character. So we have this thing where they send off the surviving humans with a message for the colonel to leave the apes alone. This is our mercy, but leave the apes alone. Unfortunately, this does not happen. We have a little scene where we get to see kind of the indoor version of the outdoor dwelling that we saw in the last movie.
By the way, I never trusted that fucker Winter.
Yeah.
When he came back, it was like, he hit me and escaped. I was like, yeah, right.
So Winter, the albino ape, turns out he's an important character. And the donkey that that they captured, the gorilla that was part of the human army, escaped after bonking Winter on the head, sort of.
You gotta make it look real, man.
It's gotta be convincing.
Then we see that Rocket and Blue Eyes have been off on a scouting expedition, and they found the desert, which I guess would lead them to believe they could go into the promised land or something. Like, somehow they thought the desert was a hopeful sign. Not sure how that was all that hopeful, but I guess at least would put some space between them and the...
Well, they said it was a better climate and the humans wouldn't be able to make it through to get there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It afforded them protection and distance that would insulate them from the scourge of the reach of the humans.
Well, unfortunately, and we also meet some other characters. We meet Blue Eyes' bride, I guess, Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Cornelius has grown up a bit. And we still have Cornelia, Caesar's wife, and everything's going great. Kind of, they're going to make their escape. But unfortunately, they are attacked by the colonel and his special forces.
Great scene.
Yeah.
Just like all the green lights and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, and it's some good, you know, I was really impressed with the CGI in this movie. Even looking back at the last two movies, the first of the series looks kind of clunky compared to this movie.
Yeah, which is crazy considering how how good it seemed.
Oh, man. And I mean, just looking at the difference in the motion capture suits between the first movie and this movie, the fact that there was some dots painted on his face before, and now it looks like he's got like three dozen little white patches, as if he had a horrible shaving accident.
That's what I was going to say. He had an industrial strength shaving accident. And they had many, 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 many more people in motion capture.
That's what I was impressed with, too.
This is the volume. But I don't know if you noticed in those comparison scenes where you see how much CGI they actually did.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible.
To create the crowds. Also, with the little girl and the doll, like all the blood was CGI. But Woody Harrelson's blood was practical.
Well, and all the background stuff. I didn't realize how much Woody Harrelson was acting in front of a green screen.
Well, and again, how hard it has to be to act. Like, the little girl had to act to Andy Serkis in his suit. She wasn't acting. Like, Maurice, she wasn't acting to Maurice. She was acting to, I assume it was a woman in the suit.
No. I think it's a guy. And the actors that...
I think it's a girl. I think it's a woman.
All right. Yeah. Well, the actors who were in the motion capture suits, they were really emoting. I mean, that's the other thing, is there was all the dots in their faces, but Andy Serkis was really acting. All the characters that played Rocket and the characters
of them.
And everybody were really acting for real.
Yeah.
And they were doing like background acting too. And they were making, I mean, they went to ape school. You could really tell. Even when they were riding on the horses, they were acting like apes as they're riding on the horses.
The guy that played Winter in Winter's final scene, he was really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. It reminded me a little bit of that episode of MASH.
The dream episode?
Yeah. The He's Going Crazy episode where there's a chicken that wouldn't stop clucking on the bus. Horrifying. Anyway, so we have this colonel in the basically the Martin Sheen. Well, I guess it's both Martin Sheen and Marlon Brando put that makeup on in the end of Apocalypse Now. But he comes in and he thinks he is assassinating Caesar, but instead assassinates Caesar's wife and son in a pretty chilling scene, full of good action.
Yeah,
and now Caesar is angry. And Andy Serkis does Angry Caesar well.
Andy Serkis does everything well.
I know. He should win every award.
You know, I can't place him in other movies, but he's crazy talented. Some of his performances, especially watching the comparison captures, just would raise the hair on the back of my neck constantly. Just his vocals.
Oh, yeah.
His vocalizations alone were so strong.
You could see the girl playing off of Andy Serkis because all she has to do is play off of Andy Serkis. She doesn't have to imagine some amazing like ape thing. She's actually playing off of a real character.
Yeah. That's a testament to his ability that he can act, he can transcend that.
Everybody did such a good job.
Yeah. He doesn't get the credit because the computer effects are so amazing on top of it.
It's true. Yeah.
It's hard to see that it is a computer effect.
When you see the side by sides, it's amazing because they really do capture his emotions, his facial acting.
Yeah. His eye movements, his breathing, his cheeks, his mouth, everything.
Yeah.
His demeanor and posture.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, I read somewhere where Matt Reeves was talking about it, because that's all anybody ever wanted to talk to Matt Reeves about was the technology.
Sure.
And he was talking about how he really had to push Weta, because when they were doing all the rendering and he was reviewing, you know, the shot by shot, he would actually tell them, why isn't Caesar making the same face that Andy is? Why isn't Caesar doing the thing with his eyes that Andy's doing? So he would make him go back and really match it up.
Calibrate it.
Well, he's to be credited then because it is amazing.
Yeah, but that side by side, that really cements it to me that they need to create a category at the Academy Awards, a new category for like motion capture, best motion capture performance. Because I think both the Weta team and Andy Serkis really deserve to get be recognized for creating the character of Caesar.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah, I would have absolutely no argument with that. And I realize what they will say as well. If you have enough money, you can do that. But that's a lot. Money is one thing, but that is some talent. I don't care. Andy Serkis did. You could throw all the money that you want at a lot of actors. I don't know a lot of actors that would be necessarily as capable as that. Maybe, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's when you talk about, you know, it's animation. But when you're talking about animation, you're talking about, you know, that you can throw a lot of money at animation. It doesn't give it heart.
I mean, Disney spent a lot of money on Beauty and the Beast, right?
Yeah.
Dan Stevens is a really good actor. And then the Beast looked pretty good, but nowhere near the level of Caesar.
Also, the fact that even with all the Jar Jar Binks in this movie, I mean, this is basically... I guess this would be the Return of the Jedi, where they threw the Ewoks in. Like, basically, it's not as egregious as the Ewoks. But, you know, the whole bad ape thing.
Nah, man, that... I think when you're not shocked by it, a lot of the Jar Jar Binksiness really goes away on the second watch.
Okay. I like Steve Zahn.
Yeah. I mean, like that scene where he just mentions, you know, that he had a child, doesn't elaborate at all. Yeah. I mean, that's really heartbreaking, even though he is mostly comedic relief.
Yeah. Oh, he's a tragic character. I mean, he definitely does not want to go on their little mission.
No.
Like, not at all. He's been there. He doesn't want to go back. But, so we have this thing where, at this point, it's a revenge movie where Caesar and his band of, in the extras, they call it the posse.
The posse, yeah.
Yeah, he puts together his posse, which after hearing old Red Fox stand-up routines, I have a hard time with that word. I'm going to throw some Red Fox posse humor here right now.
I never could spell in school. I used to miss words like posse. But I was close. 3 out of 5 ain't bad. They had a lady sheriff in Texas. Had the biggest posse America's ever known. Big, mean-looking posse. You've seen her. Maybe you rode in one. The West was won. Those type of people.
And this is one of the things that really threw me for a loop is I was expecting to see General Caesar, like, commanding his troops in a final battle. But instead, we got Caesar on a revenge mission, which is not necessarily out of character, but going down a path that you don't want Caesar to go down. Like, you can see it's bad decisions made by really strong negative emotions. And it's done really well. I mean, you understand you're there with him, but you don't want him to be making those decisions because in the past, he's always been able to make the right decisions, even in the face of, you know, high tension and high emotion.
Well, he's reached the apex of the human ape interchange where he is now fully human and the humans are turning into apes.
Also, he leaves his people.
Mm-hmm.
He's the leader that deserts his people in order to pursue a personal vendetta.
Yeah. And you understand why, but it's really uncomfortable to watch because I had so much emotionally invested in Caesar. I did not want to watch him do this, which is why I had such a hard time watching this movie the first time.
Yeah, watching Caesar, I don't want to say it's his demise, but you know that you get the sense that as passionate as he is for revenge, he knows that it's not him, and he still does it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
He knows it's not what he should do. But he's angry, and that blinds him enough that he's willing to go with it. He grudgingly accepts the posse. He grudgingly lets them come with. but he's not happy about it at all. And he makes it known repeatedly he has nothing but contempt for the fact that they've come with him. Because he's willing to just say fuck it constantly.
He's not planning on coming back.
Yep.
Yeah. But it's Maurice's job to make sure he does come back.
Yeah. And yeah. And that's really hard to swallow, seeing a nihilistic Caesar.
Yeah. So they, along their travel, their road to the revenge, they run across a, human camp.
Some kind of camp.
Yeah. And it's occupied by, as it turns out, exactly two humans. One they dispatch pretty handily, and the other is a tiny child. Not a tiny child, a young girl.
Caesar shoots him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's the first time we've ever seen Caesar shoot anybody, right?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, and he's, you know, yeah. I mean, he is acting reasonably, the human guy.
Yes.
But he's also a threat, so, yeah.
I was so worried for the briefest of moments, I thought, oh, God, that's not Dakota Fanning, is it? Then I realized she's too old now, yeah, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, just for the briefest of moments, I was like, oh, God.
And, you know, for a child actor, she does fine.
No, she did great, yeah. I thought. Yeah.
And I like the fact that they incorporate the fact that she can't speak. And it builds this whole story that explains about how the humans get to the way they get in the first of all of the Planet of the Apes movies.
Yeah, the explanation is fantastic. Yeah,
I thought it was great. And, you know, jumping ahead, her little doll is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's great. That was a great little plot element.
Yeah, I love these screenwriters. They put so much thought and care into the mythology. It's so much better than all the dogs and cats died.
Yeah, yeah. Also, much better than the craziness they had in the Marky Mark movie. I'm sorry, it's not Marky Mark's fault. The Tim Burton movie, it's his fault.
Yes.
And granted, I don't think Tim Burton had the vision of this particular series of movies.
Well, and someone I work with, and I can't recall who now, of course, we were discussing the fact that we were watching I was with my brothers just watching the Planet of the Apes movies, and I was like, huh, well, you know, I'm really amazed in the Tim Burton film how Johnny Depp didn't come to kill Helena Bonham Carter, because that seems to be a Tim Burton thing. So I don't know if that's a trope, but the fact that Helena Bonham Carter was in a movie and didn't get knocked off by Johnny Depp, I don't know.
Do you mean Mark Wahlberg?
No. They're saying there was no Johnny Depp, so she didn't get knocked off.
Okay.
But they were surprised by that fact, so
yeah, well,
I just thought I would mention. I haven't watched any movie where they've both been, and I don't believe, so.
I don't think Johnny Depp is really needs, like, has a personal need to limit his abuse to just Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to speak for him.
Yeah, of course not.
That would be wrong.
Yeah, so we have a girl, it turns out, we name her Nova. And so she's a girl that can't talk, which is puts her in the mythology right there. And she goes along with the apes, and Caesar just wants her left there. And Maurice is like, no, she will not survive.
See, like, let me ask you guys this. When did you first clue into the not talking thing about what that meant? Because it took me way longer than it should have.
Yeah, it took me longer.
It took me until Woody Harrelson's speech.
Exactly.
Yes. Like,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
At first, I thought that my first thought, I was confused by the girl, and I thought maybe she was just deaf. And then she hadn't had enough education, because when she would have been getting education, the society would have been falling apart and all that. So that's how I justified that. And then when they saw the soldiers that were basically dead, not dead, I thought that there had been some that since it seemed to me that those were some of the soldiers that got sent back on horseback, that the colonel didn't want them telling the truth about the peace offer, so he ripped out their tongues and then sent them to be killed. So I created
that's
this
a lot
whole.
Yeah.
Although it would fit that's right where into the colonel's character.
Well, yeah. And that's why, you know, that, again, not having seen this movie before, that, and, you know, I didn't know where the story was going. That's where I went with it. So that was my take on it. And so when I got the real story, I was like, oh, makes sense.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was really rewarding on a rewatch, is seeing the performance of that girl in that opening scene when she's trying to communicate and just she's really struggling and can't. Knowing what that was supposed to be, it's like, oh, it's a really good job.
Yeah, so that's then next stop on our adventure, I believe, is, yeah, finding the dead soldiers. And then also our first encounter, or our introduction to Bad Ape, Steve Zahn. And mm-hmm. and I think I said out loud while watching it in the middle of the night, oh, come on. But you're right. It's necessary to establish that there are other apes. And not all the surviving apes are followers of Caesar.
Right.
And his story, I mean, you could have a whole side story about him that would be very sad.
No doubt.
Because he's alone and has been for God knows how long.
I actually wrote down, oh, God, is this Paul Giamatti?
Exactly. That's what I thought, too.
And boyfriend Jesse said, he reminds me of Smeagol.
From?
The Lord of the Rings.
Turns into Gollum.
Ah. Also, Andy Serkis joint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those movies are boring. Or the first movie is boring.
I haven't seen any of them.
Yeah, I don't want that to be on the calendar.
I think I've repeated many times that I got forced to read all of the books in high school, and that ruined me forever on them.
It may have come up in the past, yes.
Also, I don't think those movies hold up.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, you don't?
No, I don't.
So let's see. I have the quote from Matt Reeves, the director, about why Bad Ape is important, but I think Drew already explained that. I mean,
oh, well, what did Matt Reeves say?
The quote was that Bad Ape is really, he's critical to the story, but he's actually a seed that's planted that sort of says that that's a widening up of the world. It's not just Caesar's apes, there are other apes elsewhere, and those apes haven't the benefit of Caesar's leadership. So who knows what they're like, and they certainly wouldn't necessarily have the level of empathy and integrity that he's tried to instill in his family of apes. So future conflicts might not just be between human and ape.
Mm.
So there you go. Which would make sense. I mean,
yeah,
that's where we could get the militaristic gorillas and the scientific chimps and the religious and judicial orangutans. But I like the fact that that was not the case in this movie. It wasn't so black and white. I mean, the original movies were so cartoony compared to these really nuanced movies. And a credit to them that they could pull off three really nuanced science fiction ape movies. I mean, that really is impressive to me. And even though this movie was, I didn't know what I was getting into, and it left me with lots of thoughts. I really like this movie also, and I like the trilogy as a trilogy. Although I think my favorite of the three is probably the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
But, you know, putting Caesar versus Woody, I mean, that, you know, that's a fine battle. Sort of. But
the colonel was surprisingly, I had expected far more mayhem and death and violence out of him.
Yeah, he was a nuanced character too, as it turns out.
Yeah,
he was focused.
Yeah, I mean he had a point of view, and he was a zealot, a true believer, enough to lead the Alpha Omega movement or whatever. But he wasn't a cartoon villain. He wasn't a Bond villain.
No, it's another one of the times when the movies, these movies just did everything exactly right. Because, I mean, how close is he to being a cartoonish Bond villain? I mean, he's super close.
Sure.
But somehow they pull it off.
Yeah. Well, and how close is Caesar to being like a Superman? I mean, pretty close, but, you know, it turns out he doesn't kill the colonel. Like, there is not a Caesar versus Cobra battle in this movie, because that's not what this movie, as it turns out, is about. I mean, actually, Caesar's group only wins sort of despite him.
That's right.
So, yeah, because...
Only by the grace of God, actually.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is that turns out while Caesar has left his group, the group has been captured. So when he finally gets to the destination, it's a prison camp, or military, ammunition base or whatever, that they turned into a prison camp. And they're trying to erect these this wall that's going to prevent, because there are other forces that originally we thought were coming to join with the colonel's group and form a massive army to wipe out the apes. But then it's turned out that the group is coming to actually relieve the colonel of his command because they don't believe in his methods, which Martin Sheen should have had a walk on at this point.
Yeah, the military that seems to be in the majority of their faculties believe the colonel's group is AWOL.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the colonel's group is an offshoot,
and they're defending against the active military, who believes that the scourge of plague that is affecting the humans now can be cured in virologically. There's some method or medicine that may help, and Colonel doesn't believe that.
No, the Colonel's like, no, we can solve this problem by just not introducing any more variables. Like, my team is fine. So, unfortunately, a little girl's doll will wipe them all out, which is pretty great. Now, there was a little issue, if I'm going to nitpick, and I'm going to. The fact that the last scene might indicate that they decided to build their wall out of, fuel tanks a la Quantum of Solace seems like a bit much.
Yeah, that was one of the things I read. Oh, I think if you're building the Berlin Wall, you're going to put a giant fuel depot right next to that wall.
Seemingly throughout the wall.
It's on their side of the wall.
You should just make the wall out of fuel tanks, and it just saves you the trouble.
Yeah, it seems like what happened.
Yeah.
Also, like Chevron, they decided to build there in a big facility at the base of a mountain and could have environmental consequences.
Yeah, that's one of the other things I had a problem with this. Like all the rockets going off and the planes going off and the explosions, that's... initially not what set the avalanche off, but the giant explosions at the end is what set the avalanche off. That seems like, I don't know. That seems a bit far-fetched, but again, who knows?
By the way, that facility predates Chevron by several decades.
Oh, okay, sorry. Who owned it to begin with?
I see. Before Chevron, it was Unocal. Before Unocal, I don't know, maybe Arco?
Oh. No, that was Atlantic Richfield was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we have the big explosive ending where the good humans in white go to wipe out the bad humans.
You're just yada yadding the whole prison camp part.
Well,
the whole concentration camp aspect.
Yeah, there was, and actually, if you look at the side by side motion capture versus final, when they're talking about the prison camp thing, you can see how many apes are really actors and how many are digitally inserted afterward.
A lot are digitally inserted,
but a lot are actually picking up rocks and stuff too. I mean, there's a good amount of actors.
I was actually surprised about how many were physical actors.
Yeah, and doing actorly work during the scenes that were reflected in the final thing, even though they were in some cases mostly obscured by CGI apes, there was still a good bit of ape acting in there.
Yeah, I think it gave it a good depth, though. I mean, it gave it a real, it gave the CGI apes a real depth to their performance.
Yeah,
because it only enhanced what enhanced or augmented reality.
Oh no, it was great.
To be fair,
they did a great job.
Yeah. So I mean, you're blowing past the whole part of the movie where instead of like a a huge battle between the humans and the apes. It's really just a battle of wills between Caesar and the colonel, with with some discussions between Caesar and Red Donkey thrown in too.
Yeah. Yeah, and these are all good things. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not yada-yadding it because it's bad. I guess I'm just sort of setting up the future a little bit. Although I wonder what future. Do we know anything about the future of this this franchise?
No.
Is there one?
There is purportedly a fourth movie in the works. But it's unofficial.
Isn't Matt Reeves doing the Batman movie?
I don't know.
What Batman movie? What's next in the Batman universe?
He's also rumored to have said that Caesar's not necessarily dead.
No, Caesar's got to be dead.
No, Caesar's dead.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, spoiler, Caesar's dead.
I call bullshit.
I mean, he may come back a la Obi-Wan Kenobi, but or Koba.
Or Cornelius.
Oh, no, yeah, it's got to be Cornelius. And it could easily be Andy Serkis playing Cornelius, just like Roddy McDowall played.
Exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So, when they showed the end of Escape during the making of section or the history section, where they showed that last mama, mama, mama from Young Caesar, they just replayed it back and back and back, kind of like the pigeon triple take in the Bond movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh man, these movies. What a great way to end a 9-movie run, though. I mean, this was fantastic. Yeah. I mean, this did not let me down. If we had ended with Battle for the Planet of the Apes, that would have been like, oh. If we had ended up with the Marky Mark end of the Planet of the Apes, I'd been like, ugh. But I think
you would have been happy.
Maybe. I mean, I thought there were interesting things in there. I'm easily swayed. But the first, I mean, Rise took put a lie to all that. I mean, that's absolutely the truth.
So how'd you feel about Maurice speaking?
It was fine. It's an evolution.
He spoke in Dawn.
Yeah, just briefly, right?
Mm-hmm. Run.
Yeah.
I had expected when the apes were running around the water hole of the desert, I totally expected a giant monolith.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. I mean, it would have been in line with all the other movie nods they did. And they were unapologetic about that, though. They Matt Reeves was like, oh yeah, in preparing for this movie, we just watched a ton of like Bible movies and Apocalypse Now and all sorts of movies. I mean, they really dug deep.
Yeah. I liked the movie. I want to make sure that if you have persevered to this point, you need to watch it. But I think you have to watch it mindful that perhaps this is a very different movie than you expect. Certainly it was a very different movie than I expected. And not necessarily in an unpleasant way, but just it had enough difference that it made me stand back a little from it and really this is kind of a thinker of a movie.
Oh, I found it very much so. Yeah.
And I didn't quite come away with the last two movies that same way.
No, I was the first movie. It kind of blew me away because of how, what a leap it was compared to the rest of the movies and how much better it was than the Tim Burton movie. And I thought the second movie was even better than that and much better realized, as Andy Serkis by basically being something of an acting god in my eyes now. And this movie, they managed to do all that fan service in a way that, after thinking about it for a while, really worked. And they hit all the notes they had to and still told a compelling story. And it was the end of Caesar's story, which is good. And this is a three movie Caesar arc. And Caesar is a complex character, and they never let him be an easy, simple character, which I thought was also to their credit.
Yeah, I mean, the confidence that these filmmakers had was totally on display in this movie, because they didn't make any of the easy crowd pleasing choices.
Yeah.
Any of them. Yeah. Not a one in this movie. But they had a vision of what the character of Caesar was and what his ultimate journey was going to be. And they stuck to that. And it's that really is to their credit to have such a passionate vision of what the story should be. No matter what the audience wanted, like me. This is not the movie I wanted.
You wanted the gigantic war movie?
Yeah, I mean, I was all primed after Dawn.
You wanted Caesar to be riding in a tank?
No, I just wanted to be kicking ass on horseback. He's Caesar. He doesn't need a tank.
Yeah. No, I thought they instilled the rest of the ape characters, the main ape characters, like other than Koba. And I mean, there were some side ape characters in the first couple of movies that were interesting, but none had the like co-star roles like in this movie. Like Maurice was a legitimate co-star.
Mm-hmm.
So, any other notes, Brother Jay? What did boyfriend Jesse think? And what does boyfriend Jesse think? I'm going to ask you to speak for him for the entire 9 movie run. Did he know what he was getting us into, and does he how did he think it turned out?
I'm going to ask him rather than speak for him.
Here, we'll skip ahead. Drew, what was your 9 movie arc feeling about was it worth it? Was the trip through the entire Planet of the Apes oeuvre except for the television show worth it?
Yeah, it was. You know, except for the Tim Burton one. I mean, that one is entirely forgettable. But these last 3 movies were so transcendently good. And they did such a good job of referencing the first 5 that watching the first 5 and then watching these final 3 was really and truly rewarding. I mean, I think these final 3 movies are so good that you could watch them on their own and still appreciate how good they are, but it is even more rewarding to have the original 5 under your belt, you know, to be able to, and especially watching them in a relatively compressed time frame so that everything's still pretty fresh. I think you really do get a lot out of it. You get all the little nuances and all the little winks and Easter eggs. And I think it's a great experience. And this final movie, I think it's how you want to send people off. 'Cause I think this is the most haunting of the 3. This is the one that is going to make you think and rethink and ponder some more. So yeah, and maybe, I think it doesn't leave me wanting more. Like, I am perfectly happy to have the story end here, but I don't want to let it go. Like, I want to keep thinking about it for a while. And I mean, I was compelled to watch this movie twice in a span of about 6 days. Yeah, at the second time, after watching a second time, I loved this movie. I still enjoy Dawn the most, but I think this is a really good movie. It did a really great job. I was worried that they were going to crap the bed on the final movie and I'd be disappointed. And nope, they did everything they needed to do to leave me with a satisfying experience, even if it wasn't what I expected or thought I wanted.
Yeah, me too. I found it rewarding to watch all of the movies, even if the Tim Burton movie turned out to be really a waste of money. I feel bad for all the money wasted. I mean, hopefully, you know, all the craft services people and technical people went off to do better things. But yeah, it seemed like a wasted opportunity. Except maybe they didn't know this movie, this series, this last trilogy was even a possibility. That's the thing, is I wonder if it was a failure of imagination. If Tim Burton was
Absolutely, it was.
Yeah, it was just you know, he just was hired to do a one-off cartoony movie with a slightly different bent, but basically hitting the same notes.
Well, it makes me wonder how big a Planet of the Apes fan Tim Burton is versus how big a Planet of the Apes fan Matt Reeves is.
Oh, and these writers, this husband and wife team that wrote these three movies?
Exactly.
Yeah, even if the first movie didn't start out as a Planet of the Apes movie, they really got all of the connections.
All of these movies had a very dynamic but cohesive atmosphere and effect, and the story was woven together, and it was just such a good exercise in writing that I don't there was a high level of detail through all of these movies that you can pull parts out of each movie and find commonality, not just because there's continuity of some of the actors, but just because there's continuity in theme, and there's continuity in dialogue, there's continuity in some of the color palettes, there's continuity in some of the characters, just the character lines. So all of that is a very cohesive timeline through the three movies, which progresses you forward, which gives you the option to see the potential future, the next possible movie, or at least the telling of the future / past and the cycle that happens in a way that was not in any way possible under the Tim Burton movie.
Yeah. Or even the later of the first series. I mean, I thought Conquest was probably the best of all of those movies. Just for strict, maybe not the best production values, certainly not the best effects or whatever, but as far as being like an actual like hard movie.
So,
okay. So entering the Studio P.
So, Jesse, you can get closer to the mic and you can answer Eric's question.
Okay.
So, after suggesting we do all 9 Planet of the Apes movies, and you have gone through the experience with us in one way or another, do you think, okay, what has your experience been? Are you glad you took this journey?
I think I am, yeah. I don't think there that I would say I regret it.
And so you don't regret putting us on this path of 9 movies?
Oh, well, I don't know. I can't speak for you guys. I think you guys enjoyed it.
You were skating on thin ice about movie 5. I'm just going to point that out.
Yeah, I think the newer ones really turned it around.
Oh, most definitely.
For me, at least.
Yeah. So, is this a movie? Is this a world, the Planet of the Apes world? Is this a world you want to return to? Like in a future movie? Are you looking forward to another movie in this universe?
Oh, definitely. I would for sure see another one.
So, what's the next big mission, the series of movies you're going to launch us on?
Oh, I don't know.
No pressure.
Yeah.
I think I've already taken care of that since I've saddled us all with Dune.
Oh, that's true. Yes, Dune is coming next. I was hoping for a Speed Racer arc, but maybe there's only one movie in that universe so far.
Well, you know, we have Austin Powers movies we can arc through.
That's true. And there'll be another Bond movie eventually.
Yeah. Well, we could also tangent, you know, because there's other Mike Myers movies. There's like The Love Guru, which is horrible, so...
Well,
I've also sprinkled all of the Christopher Nolan movies on the the schedule.
Anyway, so yeah, so Jesse, while you're in the room, let me just thank you for sending us on this journey. It's not a journey we would have aimed for probably on our own, so I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, thanks for having me in.
Yeah, so you're welcome anytime.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Okay,
you might even get your own pair of headphones.
Yeah, someday.
I'd have to have another microphone port, but it can be arranged.
Yeah. So a system of splitters. Or you can be a Studio PB. Instead of a system, like a LAN network of stereo of studios.
Well, yeah. I do have another laptop somewhere, so.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. So we'll let you escape now.
Okay. Thanks
escape
again.
Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you.
Escape from the Planet of the Apes. Oh, cool. There. That way I didn't have to speak for him, because I hate when I feel like I don't necessarily represent his voice well when I reproduce his syntax. So give him the opportunity to hang himself, as it were.
So speak for yourself. Any other thoughts do you have on this experience as a whole?
I would love another movie. I would love another couple, three movies, if they were able to keep the universe and momentum the same. I worry that another couple movies, though, will end up coming back around in a way that we end up with the third movie, which, you know, has that nice plot turn. So I don't,
you mean the, escape from where we have, they going back in time.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So
there is only one plot thing I can see that hasn't been woven back. And that's the Mars astronauts, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Icarus, the Icarus people can come back to the world that they have left. But they would have to explain how they could be gone for 15 years.
Well, wormholes. I mean, it's easy.
The Haslian loop, where we get the Victor Newman from Young and the Restless to explain it for us.
What? I mean, 15 or 25 or...
2,000?
I mean, yeah, the lower numbers are way more reasonable than the thousands of years.
Exactly. By the way, have you ever... are you familiar with H.G. Wells's The Time Machine?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I am only familiar. I mean, I only listened to the audiobook, I think, in the last couple of years fully. I mean, I was familiar with bits and pieces of it, but I did not realize that in one part of The Time Machine, he goes like 300,000 years ahead in the future. Like 300,000 years is too big for me to comprehend, I have found. Like, we have not had a fraction of that as a civilization, so thinking that far ahead is a big leap for me, which allowed him to paint off a pretty a clean palette there. He could do whatever he wanted, but
yeah
but then you get into the whole the time travel paradox about, is it really the future, is it really the same future if you go back from the future? Are you erasing the future to have a different future?
I believe when we revisit Primer and talk about Upstream Color, we can have that discussion again.
I'm sorry, I will be busy that week.
So, you had a verdict on this movie and the entire... I guess it's not fair to give the entire series a grade, but what do you think about this movie if you were to give it a grade?
I would give this movie an A.
Yeah, me too.
It's a solid, I mean, it's a solid A.
I think on the drive home from the theater, I would have given it slightly less, you know, like, right. Like, as soon as I saw Steve Zahn, and I didn't know it was Steve Zahn, but I thought, you know, oh crap, that's a Giamatti thing happening here. I probably would have had it in B territory, but the more I think about it, and actually even having this conversation, the more I think about it, it's an A movie. It's an A movie A series.
I was in B territory last night when I went to bed, and I thought about it some today, and I thought, I did a contrast and compare through the other two movies and realized that my emotional investment makes it an A movie.
Yeah.
The way that I reacted to the movie in a way that I had no such reaction with the Tim Burton film. And some of the original five, I didn't have the same reaction. No. So,
and the original, looking back at the original five, Roddy McDowall is a big reason those were a success.
Is there a higher quality trilogy of movies out there? Do any of them come off the top of your head?
It's hard to say. I mean, growing up, the original Star Wars movies were pretty impressive, but I don't think they hold up. In a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly the most beloved, and I love them, but this set of movies is, on a whole, is better and of higher quality than
Yeah, the Batman, the Christopher Nolan Batman movies are up there, but I don't think I like them as much.
So I will say that, you know, the Bourne movies are pretty good. Not this good. But then I want to use, I will ask you, what about The Godfather? That's a trilogy.
Yeah.
So see both. So the Batman trilogy, The Godfather trilogy, say even the Bourne movies, they all take a really substantial dip, I think, with the third movie and beyond for the Bourne movies.
The Daniel Craig Bond movies?
Both, those are pretty up and down.
Let's see. Let's go. I got the top 30 film trilogies here.
Top 30?
Wow. Yeah.
Crap, we're going to get like the Thin Man trilogies from way back.
Well, 30 is the X-Men.
No.
29 is Paranormal Activity.
No.
28 is Scream. 27 is Spider-Man. 26 is Batman. 25 is Shrek. 24 is El Mariachi.
Yeah. Shrek is okay.
23 is the Lecter film trilogy.
No.
Let's see. Infernal Affairs. Oceans, the Oceans movies.
Nope.
Austin Powers.
Nope.
Vengeance. Mad Max. Nope. Lethal Weapon.
It's hard to put comedies in there.
Yeah.
Alien. Evil Dead.
Nope.
Bourne. Three Colors.
Alien's interesting.
Alien's good. Die Hard.
Yeah.
Alien 3 is pretty rough.
The Terminator.
Alien 1 is really slow.
Terminator is
pretty good, though. The third is a rough ride, though, if you're just talking about three movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Back to the Future.
Problematic, but fun.
The Dollars. I don't know. Fistful of Dollars. Oh, those are all westerns. Okay. Indiana Jones. The Godfather. Ah. Now, this is a good trilogy. What number is
this one?
Number 6.
Okay.
The Three Flavors Cornetto film trilogy.
They're not really a trilogy, though.
Well, they kind of are.
No, they don't really have anything to do with each other.
But they're Cornetto.
No, they're great. I mean, I like them all. I like them all after talking about them even more.
calling the Cloverfield movies a trilogy.
Yeah, exactly. It's not. Wait, hold on. Is Cloverfield on the list? Okay.
So number five is the.
It's number three.
It's number five.
Number five is The Dark Knight. Number four is Star Wars. Number three is the Trilogy of the Dead.
Yeah.
Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. Yeah, number two is Lord of the Rings. And number one is the Toy Story trilogy.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
I mean, so. Yeah, wait, Planet of the Apes isn't even on there?
Nope.
Oh, because the list was probably not written before then, right?
September 2012.
Yeah, okay.
So. Okay. I would put this trilogy up against any of those.
Yeah.
And have a strong argument about it being the best one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's lots of sentimental favorites. Like, I really like the Dead trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
All for different reasons. This is the more this is as cohesive as the Batman trilogy is. I mean, as far as like built as a trilogy, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, the Dark Knight is one of my top three movies of all time. But The Dark Knight Rises was fun, but it's not a movie I'm ever really interested in watching again.
That's how I feel about Batman Begins. It wasn't as fun, and I don't want to watch it again.
Oh, I loved it.
Well, we're going to talk about all three of those movies eventually. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Let's not.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, if we're going to go through Dune, we're going to go through the Christopher Nolan Batman movies.
And then they're already on the calendar.
Yeah, so is next week still Heathers and Pump Up the Volume?
Next is The Road to Perdition, it says.
What do we do with Heathers and Pump Up the Volume?
It's the week after.
Okay.
Yeah, either way, Road to Perdition's fine. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.